This week, 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn is more than the world's largest professional network. It's also the better way to find great talent. Go to linkedin.com/happyhour to get a $50 credit toward your first job post. We got new betas this week.
Betas.
I'm so happy. Every year I have a note in Apple Notes where it's like, the day that the beta one for iOS, whatever version came out, and then I'll update it later on with when did beta 2 come out, because after that, you've kind of got like a two-week, you know, gap between like beta 2 to 3, 3 to 4, and then there's like, there's kind of get sporadic. But 1 to 2 was always kind of an unknown, and what I had documented was that since iOS 7, iOS 7, 8, and 9 were 15 days, where it was like the keynote was on a Monday, the beta came out 2 weeks later plus one on the next Tuesday. But then 10 and 11, so the last 2 years were different. It was like 16 days for 10 and then 22 days for 11. And I was like, nothing wrong with this beta, but I'm just curious what's next. And I was hoping it'd be 15 days, and it was. We're back to that cycle again. So no public beta yet, which I also went back and looked at the dates for that, and it tended to be the next week you got that, the public beta 1 would be like beta 2, like a week later or so. So maybe
next, so they probably do the dev beta 2, check there's nothing, you know, showstopper, and then they roll out the public betas.
Yeah, although it's curious to me because, in classic beta fashion, like beta 1, a lot of people thought, Apple could just release this and it would be done. But there are some bugs in it. Beta 2, there are bugs in it that affect me more than what I saw in beta 1 that are new and different, like CarPlay crashes if you go in reverse and have a backup camera, or use your right blinker and have a side camera. So that's not good. It's a beta. And then I think everyone is having issues with Siri in general, like getting I can't hear you messages.
Yeah, it goes like weirdly unresponsive. And my watch, Hey Siri just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like the betas aren't obviously guaranteed to get sequentially better, because like if you look at a proxy of how it's happening internally, like beta 1 is for the keynote and that's frozen like start of May, and they don't want to add any, if they have stuff that's coming up, it's too risky to put it in the first betas because it will ruin, the presentations and obviously the dev sessions that week will rely on doing demos on those first seeds. So all of the stuff that doesn't quite make beta 1 gets pushed into beta 2, which is normally frozen like, when they, like last week or the week before that, right? Like WWC week, the beta 2 is normally frozen inside before it comes out, because if you most of the developer sessions, they're all mentioning like, oh, well, we'll be adding, these two APIs in the next seed, like, and then beta 3 comes out and they finally got through, the feature list of stuff that wasn't even there yet, because beta 2 adds various new things in different places, which naturally leads to weird instability. And then normally by like the third beta, it from then on it's just like stability and bug fixes, normally.
Yeah. So with let's go through each of the different versions. So iOS 12, watchOS 5, macOS Mojave, and tvOS 12. Of there are a lot of like small changes and tweaks throughout. Let's just go through some of the bigger ones that stand out to us. So in iOS 12, in general, the Apple Podcast app now supports chapters for the first time, which is kind of crazy because you could always do chapters and third-party apps would expose them. But like Apple, the biggest podcast directory within of iTunes, their app didn't do it. So it was weird.
iTunes on the Mac did it. You could do podcasts in iTunes on Mac for ages.
With chapters. So.
Yeah, with chapters, yeah.
Yeah, so it's really weird on iOS. But as of iOS 12, they now support chapters, including unique album art or podcast artwork per chapter. You can even, I believe, use Siri to go to a specific chapter in a podcast. I haven't used that yet, but I think it's there. And, obviously you can skip through a chapter, go to from the list. You it's kind of like in the Apple Music app, how you can see lyrics if you go and like look for them. it's that way with chapters. You've got to like expose it. It's not.
Yeah, so it's like you have the main view at the top with the album art and the play pause controls, and then you can scroll down to get to the show notes, and then you scroll down again, and there's the chapter list.
Yeah, and new in beta 2 is that there's now a now playing indicator for the current chapter you're in, because in the first version, you know, one thing you pointed out was it's weird that you can't see which chapter you're actually in. Like, you've got to match the time up. You can't see it by looking at the list. And as
it's, yeah, and if you, like, tapped a chapter to switch to, it would just fade out, and there wasn't any, like, clear indication of the state actually changing. So now in beta 2, they use the same, like, fake volume bars, like a fake EQ that the music app has. So it's not actually connected to the sound of what's playing at all. It's just a nice little animation. The bars moving up and down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's fine. It's consistent against music and podcasts because, like, they seem to try and share a lot of the same interface. Like, the now playing card is very similar in style, which is, you know, some nice consistency. If people have complaints about the wider podcast app since iOS 11 changed it, there isn't much else in 12 apart from the addition of chapters, so the rest of it is still kind of the same. Slight mess, in my opinion. Like, isn't the best podcast app they could have done.
It's the podcast app that I use, kind of because there's no third-party app that I think is better. I used to use Instacast before it went away, and that was largely because they had clients on iOS and the Mac, and I know that there are other apps that do this today, but once Instacast went away, I used to Apple's app, and I've used Overcast, you know, like paid for every version, like paid for a subscription to unlock features for a year or so. It just doesn't stick with me, but you know, it's kind of what you like and what you're used to. The next change in iOS 12 beta 2 that I find really interesting and just like random in terms of timing is that iPad apps that are actually iPhone only apps like Instagram used to be these tiny little fat chunky apps that were, you know, ported from the 3.5-inch iPhone, basically. And now they are larger. So what happened there?
Yeah, so ever since the original iPad came out, they had iPhone app compatibility where you'd have, like, the app in a window and you'd have the little 2X button you could tap and it would just stretch it out through the screen. And it was meant as, you know, a stopgap before people did native iPad apps. 8 years later, you still get the fair share of iPhone apps that don't have iPad layouts.
Mm-hmm.
Instagram, cough, cough. A couple years ago, on the 12.9-inch iPad, they upgraded it so the 2X mode, you know, that little, like, window compatibility display thing on the 12.9-inch iPad used iPhone 6 layout. Mm-hmm. And so you get, you know, a slightly better keyboard and it's slightly taller. But the other iPads, the smaller ones, like the 9.7, which is obviously the most popular, and the 10.5, they still use, like, iPhone 4S style screens. And obviously the iPads have a lot more pixels than the iPhone 4 did. So I'm not quite sure why they didn't change it at the time. But now on this beta, on the smaller iPads, it now renders at iPhone 6 scale, and you can double it up to fill the screen once again. Obviously, it's the same. There's no magic sauce here. It's just doubling the pixels, so when it's doubled, it goes blurry, and the keyboard's massive compared to an actual iPad keyboard. Like, all the same problems that you still associate with the iPhone apps, but it's slightly nicer in that, like, Instagram on the iPad now can essentially have slightly more canvas space. You can see slightly more at once. The tabs are slightly more spread out and stuff.
It's like the effect of upgrading from an iPhone 4 to an iPhone 6. You know, it's taller. You can see a little bit more stuff. And, you know, it's just all stretched out and not good. Surrounded by black space. So, progress, I guess. And then you know, today, like, separately from all this, Instagram had a big event where they did not announce a new iPad app. They announced a new iPhone app that's separate from Instagram called IGTV, which I think was a record for me of, like, downloading an app and deciding it wasn't for me and, like, deleting it. It was not good. Next up, I don't know if you've got this in your notes, so we're a little bit out of sync again, but AirPlay 2 for Airport is hinted at again. in iOS 12 beta 2. So if you have the old, the current Airport Express that's been discontinued, in 11.4 beta, at one point, the home app would prompt you to add the Airport Express to the home app as an AirPlay 2 speaker. And then it went away, and it wouldn't work anyway because you needed a firmware update for the Airport Express. Well, that's back again in iOS 12 beta 2. Still doesn't function because you need a firmware update for the Airport Express. You know, the thing is that has, you know, it's a router, but it has an auxiliary port on the back of it. So you can do plug up a speaker to it and then AirPlay to the speaker from your iPhone. And with AirPlay 2, it's not a target for multi-room at least, and you can't talk to it with Siri. The thing is, those are discontinued, so it's still just as up in the air as ever as to, is this intentional or is this like sneaking its way back in there again? The fact that it's iOS 12 beta 2 and it's there again kind of like revives hope.
And it's actually different to the 11.4 in that now if you tap on them, it comes up with this new modal dialogue that says the airport requires a software update to support AirPlay 2.
Yeah.
So it's actually more further along than what was ever in the 11.4 strands.
Yeah, so it seems like the router that Apple discontinued but still sells until they're out of inventory and will not update in the future might have a pretty massive like feature upgrade.
I still can't buy it. Like, they're not going to discontinue a product and then release a software update for it.
And then there wouldn't be like another replacement for it either. It's like there's not really an Airport Express alternative out there on the market, you know. Like, Apple's solution was HomePod. You know, it's like if you want an AirPlay 2 speaker, buy a HomePod or any AirPlay 2 speaker that's going to be in the market.
I'm going to repeat what I said before on this. Uh-huh. Is I think they were developing AirPlay 2. Obviously, it was meant to come out 11.0 and it didn't come out to 11.4. Over the course of that, they were planning on adding AirPlay 2 support to the Airport Expresses. And then, like in January, when we asked about the state of the AirPort line, Apple said it's perfectly fine. They're continuing to sell them, and they added the Linksys Velvet Mesh for people that wanted them. But clearly at that time, they were happy to keep selling their own routers that hadn't been updated in years. And then by March, they killed them all off, and they're in stock while supplies last.
Which seems like indefinitely.
Which seems like a long time, because you can still go and buy them at the moment. Yeah. But I reckon the software that we keep, for whatever reason, keeps appearing in these branches of the public releases was in development before word came down from above that they were going to cut them off. And by the time this eventually shakes out to the public GM, AirPlay 2 support will not be there for the Airport Expresses and they won't show up anymore. Like, it's just, for whatever reason, the code's just got out of sync and it's keeps shining through on the betas, and then it keeps going away because obviously it was there in 11.4 beta and they took it away for when 11.4 actually came out. So I like, they're not going to have such a major, what are they going to say? Like, this comes out in September, they're probably sold out of airports by September. Like, oh yeah, now we've got this great new feature, all our customers we just abandoned. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. It's just a mismatch in what like management decided to do with the product lines and what engineering were like working on. That's got to be what it is.
I don't have any of those Airport Expresses anymore. I used to have a few, but I don't have any of the current discontinued ones. I just have the older ones.
I have one of the older ones as well. Like, so, this only comes up if you have the latest gen Airport Express, which is still like a 2012 product. So
yeah, the one that looks like an Apple TV, flat but white.
Yeah.
Yeah. So because of that, I'm less invested into like, will they do this or not? But it is super curious that it keeps popping up back up in betas for something that they won't. Like, every time it does, I ask them, like, can you tell me if this is going to happen or not? Like, what's curious? And because it's a beta, you know, they're not going to discuss it. So no answers there. Next thing is the fix for the alert banners, the way that they animate now. So what's that? Is this what happened with the ad that looked bad and you had a tweet go viral or something?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. This was fixed in the original beta 1 where, and we talked about this like months ago at this point, where Apple had this advert and it showed a long-standing bug with the notification center where the if you have a bubble that was smaller than expanded, so if you have like a hidden preview and then you require like Touch ID or Face ID to make it show the full content, the animation would basically glitch out, and the text, the content of the bubble would be like lamely sitting there before the bubble actually expanded to fill, and it was quick and it would take like, you know, half a second for it to catch up. So if you have to have like a decent eye to spot it. But clearly it wasn't supposed to work like that. And after I tweeted about it and it got some attention, people said that they even have it in a worse state where the bubbles would be like that forever. And it'd be like a permanent problem where the text would be overrunning the space. And after I like tweeted about it, Apple updated the ad on YouTube to fix the problem in a kind of like, you know, quick patch fix way. Like they stopped the text from escaping the bubble, but it wasn't very elegant. In beta 1 of iOS 12, and this is like many months later now, the text no longer overran the bubble, and it had like this fade transition. In beta 2, they've actually gone a lot further, and they've revamped like the whole animations for how going from a bubble on the lock screen, and then you press on it, and it gives you a preview. And you know, if you have like previewing a message, it will give you like the transcript, and you can type a reply. There's actually a really nice animation now that's not only faster than what they had before, but also it kind of like before the like 3D touch view would just kind of like fade in from the middle of the screen. Now, if you do it on iOS 12 beta 2, it kind of morphs, like the bubble on the home screen stretches out and turns white as the content comes in. So mm-hmm. it's a lot cleaner, and I'm very happy to see that this is so much nicer than what they had for the entire of the iOS 11 cycle. So, and it also plays into their kind of like performance and stability stuff, because now it's just faster to do a 3D touch and do something with it because mm-hmm. the animation's quicker and it's a nicer animation to boot. So it's a big win all around.
Yeah, I'm glad you're happy. You know, I got a podcast app on the watch. You got this. So we all have our thing. I'm glad you're happy. Next is the watchOS 5 beta 2, and I was happy to see that we can finally test walkie-talkie out, and we have. And what do you think about walkie-talkie?
Oh, it's weird, right? Like it's the yellow icon. You tap on it. You add a friend that also has to have an Apple Watch, because it very clearly states on the introductory screen that it's, you know, two-way communication with other Apple Watch users. Which is like how Digital Touch started, and then a few years later they brought it to the phone, so maybe this will be the same. But for now, it's watch-to-watch only. You have to add somebody else from your contacts. There's no clear indicator in the contacts list of who else has an Apple Watch, so you just have to know.
Mm-hmm.
You add them to your screen. Then you have to make yourself available to receive a call. And then if you tap on someone's name, you can send a message. And then it goes to the other person, but the audio of the message is sent like it's basically like a FaceTime audio call, except only one person talks at once. And once you're both available, you don't get an option to decline the call. Your watch just starts chirping, and you start hearing the other person's voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think it uses the face amount of stuff behind the scenes, but then it's like you said, it's like auto answer if you deliver and you're available. So it's very different than any other form of communication. Like, it's not the same thing as a voice memo where you can send it and you receive it and then you hit play whenever. And there are some niceties about it. Like, you can still send someone a message if they're not available. It will just say after you send it that the person is not available, and then they'll get an alert that kind of shames them as like, you know, Benjamin messaged you when you were not available, and then you can play it back and then respond. But it's a few things about it that are strange to me that I think are reason they'll probably keep it off always, except for like yesterday's initial testing, is that the only way to not receive one of these messages if you're is to be unavailable, which means opening the app, going to the toggle, tapping it, you know, leaving the app. If your watch face is off, like, you know, wrist is down, watch face off, the message comes through. If you're in mute mode, so you have the little bell, you know, where it's red and struck through and you don't get sounds, the message comes through. If you're in do not disturb mode, where every alert is disabled, it comes through. And if you're in theater mode, it comes through. Now, I would think that I would expect that if you're wide open, that it works the way it works, okay. But if you mute, then you just get a tap and you have to go and like play it the same way you can play it if you're not available and you like respond to the alert afterwards. If you're in do not disturb mode, nothing happens in terms of the tap sound, any of that, and you can go back and play it. And if you're in theater mode, same thing. But the way it is like all of those modes do nothing to prevent it from coming through. It's strictly up to you being available or unavailable. And there is affordance for if you're not available, it isn't like you miss your message. You still get to hear it. You know, you just play it back afterwards. So, you know, maybe this is like radar worthy, but I don't think it's that intuitive. Like maybe do not disturb should make you unavailable, and then leaving it turns off your, you know, makes you available again if you were available to begin with. Because right now it's just like way too much.
Well, it's so power. Intrusive, and it's like. It feels so dangerous to leave yourself available because your other person probably doesn't know, you know, what you're doing right at that instant. If you're having a conversation with someone and suddenly they hear someone else's voice coming out of your wrist, they're like, you know, what the heck is going on? Like, it's so weird. Or you're in a meeting, like if you have like a jobby job and you have to go and then someone sends you a message, but you've got your watch muted, but it still makes a noise and like, it's just going to get in the way too much. Like,
yeah, like it's on you to manage your availability. But then the fact is for me, it's like opting into being available is not going to be the most common state for me. And so I'm not going to build the habit of going to the walkie-talkie app and say, okay, now I'm available in addition to not being muted or not being D&D'd. It's almost like you've got to have an agreement with the person, like for this scenario, we're going to use walkie-talkie. Okay. Okay. Let's both be, and then opt in for that, like one event. But,
then you're already talking to them via another medium.
Yeah. And it's like the scenario I mentioned last week where, me and my wife use the Echo announce feature to communicate to different rooms, via the Echoes. It's like, there's less friction with that than there is with managing your availability. It's like in the walkie-talkie app. So I think it's like charming. The way it works is interesting because it's so different than any other message format, even though it uses the same, you know, formats of like, it's just voice. It's that they play around with permissions and how it's delivered that makes it neat. It's just that with managing your availability being so much a part of it, that takes away the appeal for me.
And like, it's going to be way more. You're going to have to be way more selective than, like, with iMessage, right? Like, the people that you add your friend as on this would have to be way more selective because it's only going to be like, you know, your partner, your spouse, and then maybe your kid or something. If your kid has a watch, like, even then it'd probably get too annoying. You can only have like one or two people on that service because otherwise you're just, there's no history. Like you can't dismiss, it's there in the moment. Like it like what is the advantage of doing that versus sending someone a text that they can read at their leisure?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like what scenario is it worth even bothering, you know, versus it's definitely the least efficient way to communicate with somebody because
when we were testing it yesterday, I was like, okay, let me pretend like you're, you know, someone I really care about right now. And we're going back and forth with this push to talk thing. At that point, you might as well just have a phone call. Like, because if soon you get into an extended conversation, you can't just talk freely. You have to hold down the screen to talk. Then you have to let go. And the other person can hear it in real time, but then they have to hold down the screen to talk back. Like, at that point, you might as well just, you know, be talking with FaceTime audio or just on a phone call. Like, if there's someone you actually really care about and it's something important, they could just call you. Like,
I don't think you'd use it for that, but
you really need it for, like, short messages. Like, I'm on my way home, and that's it. Like, you really have to have this kind of, like, I think you're going to have this like social, you know, implicit like social contract with the other people in your friends list. Like, if you're going to use it at all, it really needs to be for like short bursts. Like, you've left work, you push to talk, you know, your partner, and say, "I'm on my way home," and that, and then they'd be, "Okay, love you, see you there," and that'd be it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But are people going to go to the effort to arrange that with each other? They're just going to think it's too annoying, and they'll just use texts, which also have all their other friends and everything else, and you can send pictures, and you can send videos, and you can mute and ignore it if you're not interested. Like,
it's definitely way more intimate than any other way to communicate. Is because like you know you to be available, like you're giving the other person permission to speak to you through your watch, like, you know, as they say it, and using it with you and testing it. It was like I kind of got in the rhythm of listening, pressing the button, talking back to you, like. And when the message comes in, like, it doesn't just play. Like, it opens the app and plays. So, like, you're right there, positioned to respond quickly. Stuff like that was, like, very fluid and, like very fast. And I didn't immediately realize, even though I knew this, that as the sound comes through, you're pretty much saying it. Like, it's real time. You can't speak over the other person. Like, you've got to let them finish before you can send something back to them. But like I did a thing with a friend where I was like speaking for a long time, and I was like, I'm going to keep going, and like you're going to need to let me know if this stops because I'm just like testing the limits of it. And it's like once I was done, they were like, "Yep, I heard all of that. I was counting down with you. Like it was real." And I can kind of see scenarios of like if you're traveling or something, or you, like someone that you want this like intimate way to communicate where it feels it's like a step down from like a FaceTime call, and a FaceTime audio call just feels like a phone call, just using a different way to do it. But it's more intimate than sending a message, like a text message or even an audio message, you know, because it's so ephemeral. Like there's no record of it. There's no trail. It goes and you play it and it's done.
Apart from if someone's standing next to you when it comes here.
Sure, yeah. But like alone in your hotel room or something. Like I can see.
But that's the problem though. Like the other person probably doesn't know what you know where you are or if you are alone.
Yeah, well they might need to know. Like maybe that's an area where they would know. Or if it's like kids and like best friends and like they it's like I can see like a romanticized way that this fits into someone's life, just probably not mine.
It's like a discreet, you know, intimate form of communication, but broadcast essentially publicly wherever you are because it just comes straight out your wrist. Like
yeah.
If you always wear headphones and it came through, you know, it's kind of like cute, but I just think it's way too dangerous. Like,
yeah,
if you're just saying, you know. Like, you don't even have to say anything particularly out. It's just weird. Like, you could be walking around the shopping center and then, you know, you go to pick up some bread and then someone's like, "Oh, what are we having for dinner?" Like, I think for it to have any chance of being used, it has to be able to respect do not disturb and mute. Like,
yeah.
It just has to because, and in those cases, it just gives you a vibration. You could see that, oh, someone's trying to walkie talkie, and then you can opt into it, right? And then, if you're not muted and stuff, then okay, it's gonna say a message out loud. But or you have an option where it always like just chirps and it just gives a little ringtone, and then then you can tap to confirm, and then you can start you can catch up and start up the two way chat. Like maybe there needs to be a mode where it never immediately starts talking at your wrist; it just goes ba-dip, and then you could like confirm with a tap, and then actually go into the conversation. So at least you get some kind of barrier before. You know, another human just starts randomly talking at your elbow.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of this thing being like super permission where it can just come through at any point. But in practice, I think it's not super realistic to use that.
And like part of the pitch of the watch is like you can be really discreet, and it can if you get a notification, it can just tap you, and you can know that you've got something to look at. But even if you're talking to someone else right now, they won't know that, you know, you're getting a tap, like, because I just leave my watch on mute all day long.
Mm-hmm.
But then this just flies in the face of that because it's just going to, you know, be obnoxious.
Yeah. So I can see this changing in future betas, or if it ships like this, changing like a point update or the next version of watchOS. because to be super effective, I think it needs to at least respect the mute switch and do not disturb, not just be super reliant on the availability toggle that is like within the app, not in Control Center. Like even add a Control Center tile for it. I don't usually say that, but I do have a gap now on my Control Center, so you could put one right there.
I like the idea of it. The initial current implementation feels too hazardous for anyone to actually commit to it for anything more than like a gimmicky first day playing around with it.
Yeah, it's too risky. And also you mentioned before, but whenever you add a friend, they give you suggestions, which I think are based on like people you communicate with often anyway, or maybe that have watches because I believe it can see that. But it's not people that are on watchOS 5 beta 2. So I thought that a friend of mine might have been. So I added him and I sent him just a simple, hey, and he texted me back and was like, I'm having dinner. Is everything okay? And it turns out it made his phone ring. Like, I don't know if it sent us like a FaceTime audio call, but I don't ever call him on the phone. And he thought something was going on because I, all of a sudden I was calling him and I was just sending him, you know, a walkie talkie hello. So 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. It's no secret that hiring the right talent for your company is hard. It can feel like a full-time job all on its own, but LinkedIn can take the guesswork out of hiring. That's because LinkedIn is more than the world's largest professional network. It's also a better way to find great talent. The way it works now is you post a job to a jobs board and hope you find the right person for your job. But if you think about it, how often do you check job boards? For most people, it's a pretty occasional thing, but there is a place where people go daily to grow professionally and explore job opportunities. In fact, 70% of the U.S. workforce is already there. It's LinkedIn. You already know LinkedIn as the world's largest professional network. And here's the thing. It's also a better way to find great talent. Just ask any of the hundreds of thousands of businesses who have posted on LinkedIn Jobs over the past year. And because LinkedIn considers skills, experiences, location, and more to match and promote your job to potential candidates, businesses are rating LinkedIn Jobs 40% higher than jobs boards at delivering quality candidates. 22 million professionals view and apply to jobs on LinkedIn every week in every industry, even yours and mine. If you're not using LinkedIn for your hiring needs, there's no better time to start than now. Just go to linkedin.com/happyhour and get a $50 credit toward your first job post. That's linkedin.com/happyhour for your $50 credit today. Terms and conditions apply. Our thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. And then my last complaint about walkie-talkie is that when you're available, it does let you know that you're available because
this is so bad.
It puts a super persistent indicator on the watch face, on every watch face. You get
bright yellow.
Yep. You get the icon for walkie-talkie on your watch face. If you want to be able to receive these alerts, you're going to have to put up with having it on your watch face always. It's crazy. And like you could tap it and launch the app and like that's a good thing, but I would be much happier with just a Control Center toggle and, you know, having it in the dock on the, when you click on the side, but not having it be like the main thing in the middle of the watch face. Like today you can have alert badges where you have the little red circle if you have any alert. And, you know, you can disable that if you want to. But with this, it's like if you're available for walkie-talkie, it's going to be there always. And it's not pretty. So
yeah, and like the notification indicator, which is the little red dot, like that has some purpose because, you know, throughout the day you see a red dot, you check the notifications, you clear them, the red dot goes away. But presumably, you know, you're supposed to be available all day long, essentially. And then you just have this redundant yellow icon at the top of the watch face for the entire day.
Yeah, it's like Apple must envision that walkie-talkie is used sparingly and only in certain scenarios, and they've not really described those very well, because to have it be on all the time, is problematic. And then to have this indicator on the watch face, it's just ugly. And like the watch is supposed to be, you know, partly about not just function, but fashion. And to me, this big yellow ugly icon is like, it's not pretty. And you can customize your watch face, you know, in so many ways. But if you use walkie talkie, you can't get rid of this thing unless you don't use walkie talkie. I don't like it. Also new in watchOS 5 beta 2, new in watchOS 5 is an indicator in the same place as the walkie-talkie one in the middle of the top for location. So, like, if you're using, you know, Apple Maps to navigate somewhere, you'll have a, like, I think it's a blue circle with a hollowed-out compass icon arrow, and you can tap it and launch the Maps app. And I think it's pretty useful because, like, before, if you used navigation on your iPhone, you'd always have the Maps app open first on your watch. Now you can kind of dismiss that and see your watch face on wrist raise, just like with audio apps. But you get a little shortcut with this indicator, which is only there when navigating. So not always, because you're not always navigating. That was useful in beta 1. In beta 2, they've added a now playing indicator for audio. And I think they've gotten this wrong too. So what it is it's a slightly larger than the red circle alert, but it's also a red circle with the like bars of like playing music, you know, static. But
it's now playing icon.
Yeah, it's the now playing icon. And you can tap it and launch, I guess, whatever. It's the now playing like tile or app, whatever. And it's really aggressive too, and the problem with it is that it looks like the alert dot, but a little bit bigger. And it would make sense to me if it was only for now playing audio coming from the watch. This is like, you know, just so you know, you're not playing this from your phone. You're playing it from the watch, and that's why your battery's draining faster. It's not that way. It's for every audio possible that can show up on now playing the app, including your iPhone, your HomePod. Like, it's really aggressive. It's like I'm never going to find it more efficient to go to my watch and control HomePod than use my voice if I started it from my voice with HomePod. And I don't think there's any toggle here either. It's just like, you're on watchOS 5, this is what you get. And I think it needs a change.
Yeah, it is. I think if it had now playing indicator, if you were playing on the watch itself or on the phone, it would be okay, because then it's like you're actually doing an action with your devices and you can tap in and you get like a little remote control for the phone, or you're controlling, you know, it could take you back to the audio app that you're currently using on the watch. But with watchOS 5, the now playing screen can show for like any AirPlay 2 accessory. Like, if you start playing music on your HomePod, your watch face can spring up the now playing screen if you have that setting turned on. Or if you play something on the Apple TV, it can pop up and you can control volume and stuff, you know, from the watch. If you, and that popping up of the now playing screen can be controlled by a setting, you know, like automatically show now playing,
which I have off.
Yeah, and I have it on through watchOS 4, and on watchOS 5 it already showing up is not terrible. It is a bit weird because, like, if I'm in a different room in the house, then someone else in my family turns up, starts playing music on the living room Apple TV, and then suddenly it pops my watch. Like, that's a bit weird. But it generally works okay. The indicator, though, never goes away, and there's no setting for it. So, so if you can be like out in the garden, and you have like a HomePod in the kitchen playing music to someone else that isn't you, and you still just have this permanent indicator on the screen, like. And it'll never go away unless you stop playing any music anywhere.
Yeah, for me, the thing is, I play music from the iPhone to another source, whether that's, you know, headphones, CarPlay, HomePod, whatever, so often that it kind of makes now playing become a permanent part of my watch face. And visually, I don't want that. And functionally, I don't really want that either. Just like I have, that's why I turned off the auto launch audio apps feature, because it made my watch face the audio app now playing tile, because I'm playing something so often that it's like, that's what I see by default, not the watch face that I've customized. This is more subtle than that, but it's also more persistent because you can't toggle it off. And it is so like, I think it's even like video on Apple TV. It's like, no, I don't want that. So
yeah. And I'm leaning closer to turning the automatically show the setting off now that it picks up the TVs and the HomePods and stuff. Like, it never used to do that, so it wasn't as annoying. It's nice that if you are playing music, it will add the now playing app to the dock, you know, it's, mm-hmm. it's one button away and you can just scroll past it if you don't need it. But if you do, it's really handy and actually convenient. But it doesn't disrupt your watch face, right?
Like, yeah.
It's the icon, this permanent icon, whether it's walkie-talkie or whether it's this, that just... The location nav one is fine because it's like, you know, you're actively navigating. So it makes sense for the context. But it's these other ones which, you know, you can be having music play literally from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep. And at that point, it's like, why is this icon here all day long?
Yeah, yeah. It's just a persistent shortcut. It might as well be a complication.
If you look at the iPhone, right, the iPhone doesn't put controls for play pause on the lock screen if your TV's playing.
Right.
Right, you can go into the control center widget and scroll down and change the tile if you want to, but it's only going to put it on the lock screen if you're playing music on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, like, wake up the screen with this now playing center for the HomePod. Like, why does the watch need to do that? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, yeah. And this is something that my gut on this one is that the sticks around doesn't change. Like, this is just how the watch works from now on. And I don't love it. Like, it just, I literally changed the, like, I was playing audio on my iPhone and I switched to audio on my Mac because I didn't want to see the little red dot there. I was like, I don't want that. You know, because I think it's just like I said before, like, the watch is partly about fashion and like, you know, visually aesthetic to you. And, to me, that's not the right way to do this. Also, in WatchOS 5, beta 1, they removed time travel, which was introduced, I think, in like WatchOS, was it 2 or 3?
2.
Yeah. And then, by 4, maybe in 3, they disabled it by default, and then you could turn it on if you knew how to go and like look for the setting and turn it back on. But, you know, a flagship feature of a WatchOS update was, you know, not that good. And they recognized that it wasn't useful. And I think it caused developers problems too. And now it's totally gone. And WatchOS 5 beta 1, it was out of WatchOS itself, but it was still an option in the watch app on the iPhone.
Like, yeah, it still showed up as settings. So it wasn't clear if it was just like bugged.
Yeah. Well, now in iOS 12 beta 2, you know, affecting WatchOS 5 beta 2, it's no longer even an option. So that's Apple, without addressing it, totally killing off a flagship feature, time travel, what they thought was so clever. Like, what it was you needed the digital crown didn't do anything on the watch face, you know, until you had the Siri watch face. So the digital crown would change the time on the watch face and then, like, show you the weather in 2 hours if you scrolled up to 2 hours from now, or your calendar event. And it was like, they thought it was a clever way to let you see your schedule ahead and all the conditions for that, but I don't think it took off very well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a clever idea in theory, but I think you never end up using it, really.
Yeah, it was one of the first...
And a lot of the complications can't predict the future. Like, yeah. It's weather and then maybe, like, calendar that you could scroll to tomorrow and see the calendar change. Mm-hmm. But, like, I remember they used to have, like, they used to push, if you have an electric car, you could put, like, your car's battery on the lock screen. Well, obviously, it doesn't know how much you're going to use your battery in the future because it depends on how you use it during the day. So those kind of things can't be predicted. And like music, if you have a now playing music thing, that would just have to be grayed out. And so realistically, it only applied to like a couple of the complications. So, and then nobody used it. So
yeah, more useful than that is turning on your display by spinning the crown from like the lowest brightness to like the highest brightness. It's like, that's useful. Use of the crown, like watch faces off, spin your crown, it slowly illuminates, and if you just see what, like, you just want to peek at it in the dark, you don't even need to go like full brightness, and that's useful. You know, on watch face like the Siri watch face, you scroll the crown to go up and down your timeline, and that's useful. But there were fans of time travel out there, so because they, you know, they witnessed the change and didn't like it. So RIP time travel. Next up, we've got macOS Mojave beta 2. And the only thing I can really think of that changed is in the Maps app in beta 1, dark mode would make the window chrome, which there's not very much of, dark, but not the map itself. And it's one of the things I followed a radar over because in CarPlay, at least, if you're using navigation at night, the map automatically changes from a light mode to a dark mode. And
yeah, it does that on the actual iPhone as well, if you just have your iPhone docked.
Okay, so if you that's useful. But on the Maps app on Beta 1, it did not do that in dark mode for the Maps app. As a Beta 2, it uses a dark mode. I think it's a new dark mode, but it's what I expected, which was all the elements go from being bright and, you know, to being darker, as you'd expect. So
yeah, like the if you look at the you have to look like side by side, but you'd spot it. Like the night mode on iOS is a lot flatter in terms of just like sapping the detail, because I assume, you know, it's primarily for turn by turn directions, right? So they take away a lot of the random details, whereas on Mojave you can just be in dark mode and just, you know, browsing around. So it's new cartography that's all like darky, slightly different like color tints and stuff, and it's more detailed than what the night mode on iOS would be. So it's nice they've taken the time to, like, you know, actually do it really well rather than just porting something over.
Mm-hmm.
And like the little zoom controls with like the 3D button, they're all blurry, and it's actually a non-stand. I'm not sure if you could do that with public APIs, because normally the blur effects on the Mac require like a rectangle, if that makes sense, and all those little controls are like weirdly shaped, like a round circle and stuff. So they've done some like tricky stuff there to make that work. But yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
The big functional problems with maps on Mac still haven't been addressed in Mojave, by the way. Like, indoor maps are a big feature on the iOS, on iOS now, and the Mojave maps still don't support them.
Right, yeah. And that was a feature that just hasn't made it yet. Which would be useful. I mean, like, you know, as a reference point. I use maps on the Mac a lot more often than I thought I would. Like, I'm often opening up the app and like looking how far away is something, like business hours or something, like details about a business or something local. They have transit. It's like, okay, if you can have transit, then what can't you have indoor? And I think part of transit is like you can look up transit directions and then send it to your phone without having to do anything on the phone. But yeah,
I've done that before. Like in the morning, gone on my laptop, found out the train times through the transit mode on the Maps app, and then just sent the itinerary to the phone and then left.
Like, and then, what is it? It makes that like an alert on your iPhone, and you tap it and it opens it up. Yeah. So you can see the same thing like apply. Can you? I know you can do indoor maps. So can you do indoor map directions? Like, you know, and you're free in an airport, walking directions to the Apple Store in a mall.
Yeah, I think it gives you directions. Yeah.
Yeah. So that'd be useful from the map for the Mac too. It's like, you know, peek at your Mac. There you go. It's got to be just like a getting around to it thing. And this wasn't the.
I mean, that's one of the classic cases where it's like one day these things will be unified into like Marzipan or whatever, and then like the map canvas will just be the same on every platform, but. That's, you know, until we get there, they running on different code bases, they're out of sync, and then you have to wait for them to catch up on features. Inevitably iOS adds more, and then it's, you know, it's just like a cat and mouse race, and they're going to eventually standardize that, but not today.
And I don't think there was anything else super notable on beta 2.
On the About This Mac screen, they have a dark image now for the OS if you're on dark mode, and they have a light image if you're in light mode.
Yeah, and they cleaned up on a lot of the Marzipan apps. They cleaned up the about pages for the apps too. It's like some of them used to be like crazy long paragraphs of text, and some of them had like 2007 as like the registered trademark, and now they all say like 2018. I think news is still kind of like has nothing but the word news there. But like one thing I'm like a little bit concerned about is like the home app on the Mac. You know, it's like the worst of the Marzipan apps. You know, the ported apps from iOS, and I don't. You know, I was kind of hoping that this would like mature a little bit throughout the betas to be like, you know, this is at their end, but they're going to get better. And I don't think there are any changes in the home app, at least. Like the other ones, I just open them and they seem fine. Like, I think the biggest complaint about the news app is that if you're in dark mode, the window Chrome changes, but like the content is like Safari, you know, it's not going to change. And that's just kind of a dark mode problem. With the home app, the problem is that like so many of the controls are hidden. Like, I didn't realize you could delete your entire home the way that you can on iOS. Like, you can add new homes, and you can manage users. You can see your hubs. Like, all those things you can do on iOS with a little top left corner icon, which is like a compass on iOS 11 and earlier. And on iOS 12, it's like a little house. There's no icon for it on Mojave, but there is a mini bar navigation route that you can get to that same screen, and it looks like once you open it, it just looks just like the iOS app. It's just so hidden. It's like some of those things need to be more polished before they release it, even if it looks funky. Like it looks funky. And I'm curious if, you know, if this changes or if this is, it's like they're done and it's just going to shift this way.
Yeah. This is a big topic that we would definitely talk about more, but yeah. I am not on the marzipan wagon at the moment.
Yeah. We will discuss it in another episode, but to me, it's like, form, it's like function over form in the biggest way. And at a certain point, like, I'm all okay with being like, okay, we finally have the function and the form's terrible. Now let's iterate on the form now that we have the function.
Yeah, and like, it's just, what they've cleverly done is only done Marzipan on new apps that didn't exist before, so nobody complained that their apps got worse, right?
Sure.
Like, yeah. It's not like they're replacing Safari with iOS Safari, that was complaining. Yeah. It's new apps that you never had before, so at the minimum, you're getting features that you never had before.
Yeah.
But if every app on the Mac turned into what these, you know, iOS clone Marzipan's app are, it would not be a very nice day.
And well, and
things like stocks and news, they're kind of smaller in scope apps, like, you know, they're single screen experiences with like a sidebar. But I think Home is like an example of something which is much richer, and you have like all these detail screens and all these places where if it was actually a Mac app, it would take advantage of the screen in different ways with like popovers and better like contextual menus, and you wouldn't do like this right click and it open the 3D touch blur modal and then it opens this, you know, over the screen form sheet iOS like monstrosity. Like, I think the Home app starts to show like the limitations of the current state of Marzipan, and I'm really hoping they, you know, clean some of this stuff up by the time like third party developers can start using this stuff next year.
I would like to see a good like Dribbble style mock up of the Home app redesigned both for iPad and then what that looked like on the Mac too. Because like if it looked more like the news app does and the stocks app does, like with the sidebar approach, then I think it would feel better on the Mac. Like it'd feel more like the Photos app does with a sidebar. And instead it's like it's just super weird. And honestly, like it's not that it isn't not weird on iPad as well. It's just its own thing on iPad as well. It's like Control Center as a full application with you know, non-conventional choices that have been made, and it just really shines like that on the Mac. Next up is tvOS 12 beta 2. The tvOS 12 beta has a lot of things that were announced left to show up, like the space screensavers, tapping on the remote to see where the screensavers were shot, like useful features that I can't wait to see. Not in beta 2 yet, but what you can kind of see is Dolby Atmos support starting to appear. So my Apple TV 4K is on tvOS 12 beta 2, connected to a Dolby Atmos soundbar. And now when I go to the settings for audio and video, there's a section for surround sound in a subcategory called spatial audio, and it lets you see the type as Dolby Atmos. So, it, you know, we're getting closer. The fact is, though, that I don't think we're going to see any Dolby Atmos content on tvOS until tvOS 12 is out, because iTunes content gets upgraded for free if there's Dolby Atmos support in the movie, which is going to be a lot of my movies because I bought a lot of movies. But it's going to be a free upgrade to the content, but I wouldn't expect to see that until really close to release. And the same for apps like Netflix, a lot of Dolby Atmos content for sound. And I don't think that they're going to submit an app update or if they even can. So support's there, I guess, but you just can't really appreciate it until the fall. But I'm looking forward to it. So I don't have a lot of experience with Dolby Atmos. I just know that my soundbar can support it, and I'd like to take advantage of that. So,
yeah, that'd be cool when you can actually try it out. But yeah, they won't start upgrading the iTunes library probably until like September.
Yeah, the thing with the screensavers too is that you know, the space aerial ones, it's kind of hard to test because there's a setting that is download new content monthly, weekly, or daily, or never, I guess. And I used to do monthly because I feel like they didn't change that often anyway. But I switched it to daily so I can know if the space ones arrive, like maybe. And I feel like on like the day one of beta for tvOS, like maybe I'm not going to see them until the next day. So maybe they'll show up, or maybe it will be a separate screensaver. Like, they didn't make it clear. Do you pick Ariel or, like, Space Ariel? You know? I'm not sure, but it seems like so far they've just not added those yet. So they're planned, but not there yet. I think that does it for the going through the, what's new in the betas for this 2 week period, and we probably get new betas in 2 weeks from now. Would you guess?
Yeah, about they normally run on fortnightly.
Yeah,
rollouts from now on.
Yeah, and maybe next week we see the public beta, which is, you know, like the same build as what we got today. Although, like I said, there are some pretty nasty bugs out there too, so I don't know if we'll do it.
They shipped the iOS 11 public beta in a pretty rough condition. Like,
that's true. It comes with disclaimers. Beta,
they don't do it on beta 1, but they've done, you know, public betas and beta 2 very frequently. So.
Yeah. I'll also add that for the watchOS update, I had no issue with watchOS 5 beta 1, the one that got pulled. But with watchOS 5 beta 2, my watch got stuck on the spinner where it was like complete with the Apple logo and all the ticks around it. And then I had an alert on the iPhone that was like, your watch is up to date. And that's the part where you're like, you can take it off the charger and like just let it reboot and it's done. And it reboots itself and you put in your passcode and you're in. Well, it was like an hour went by and it was stuck at 100%. So I just thought, oh, well, it's bricked. I'm done with the watch for a few days, I guess. And so I tried rebooting it, thinking, like, what's the worst that can happen? And that worked. Like, rebooting it, powered back up, asked for my passcode, did a little bit more loading stuff, and then I was on beta 2 with, like, walkie-talkie functional. And I saw at least two other people that had the same experience. So watchOS beta is scary as ever.
I tell you what, mm-hmm. My update on watchOS to the latest beta 2 was one of the best watchOS updates ever in terms of speed.
That's great to hear. I'm happy.
I was actually shocked in how fast it was, because normally it's like, all right, I'll see you tomorrow with Apple Watch.
Yeah, yeah.
It actually happened in a reasonably quick time. So,
by the way,
surprised.
What time does a beta come out in your time zone in the UK?
6 p.m. normally.
That's pretty nice, because it's 12 p.m. noon for me. So I rearranged my lunch around. So I guess it's 10 a.m. in California. All right, let's do a little bit of news at the end of the show today. This is an announcement that Apple made about their Hush Hush video service coming out in the future at some point. Apple announced that they have a multi-year original content deal with Oprah. And the announcement was so short, you can pretty much quote it. They say, today, Winfrey and Apple will create, or together, Winfrey and Apple will create original programs that embrace her incomparable ability to connect with audiences around the world. Winfrey's projects will be released as part of a lineup of original content from Apple. So that's an official announcement from Apple, like on the Apple Newsroom site, where they kind of acknowledge the unannounced video service.
And they've kind of done this before, though, right? Like,
yeah.
Even when they hired Ehrlich and Amberg, like, almost a year ago now.
The Sony guys.
They did, yeah, the Sony people who were basically heading up. The Newsroom Post said they're heading up worldwide video programming. Eddie Q's mentioned they're working on original content before in interviews and stuff. Like, they won't explain to you how they're going to serve this content to you. But I think they're being reasonably, you know, upfront that, yes, we are making original content shows.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
A foregone conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not just like it's also reasonable to expect that it's not Apple Music's Carpool Karaoke and Planet of the Apps. Like this is something different than that.
Yeah, this is like serious.
Right. The Oprah thing, I think a fair comparison is you know where the New York Times had reported that Netflix was talking to the Obamas about, you know, a content deal where they create content for Netflix. And the New York Times had said that Apple was interested in that. Although it wasn't clear to me if that was just like to make the story and have an Apple angle or if, you know, sure, it was true. But, you know, at the end of the day, Apple did not get that deal. But they get this deal. And it strikes me that this deal came out where all of the other stories come out from like Deadline and the Hollywood Reporter and Variety, you know, the typical entertainment industry publications. This one did not leak that way. And I think, I don't know if the leaks are like reporting being discovered or if it's like, you know, the deal's done and like Apple wants people to know. But this one came out by Apple Newsroom, just like the Sony hires did. You know, that didn't leak either. It was like, it would be a good leak, but you know, a nice scoop. But this is like an Apple official announcement. So that struck me. It's like Oprah doesn't leak, you know.
So as the resident American, can you just contextualize how big is Oprah Winfrey culturally? Because I don't really know. I don't think she's very big over here. I just know her from all the memes of him giving away cars.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm not the right person to answer, but like my exposure to Oprah is that no one doesn't know her name, just Oprah, you know, or Oprah Winfrey.
Is she kind of like Ellen DeGeneres?
Well, so back in the 90s, like, say, I was 27, I was born in the 90s, but in the 90s, she had a TV show. It was like a talk show, and it was one of the first, I guess, daytime talk shows. It was like a whole format that I don't know if it was popular now, but it was like the same format as Ellen, I guess. Yeah. And that's when it was like, it was, you know, the Oprah Winfrey show. It was called Oprah. And that's where I was like, you know, Oprah from. And eventually it's like, she retires from that. And then she was also in some movies and some acting. But it was like the way I knew her was from the talk show. And then that went away and she like formed the Oprah Winfrey Network, OWN, which will still exist like separate from the Apple content. Which I think informs like what the Apple content will be like, not what OWN stuff is. But then she has her own magazine, and it's just like this whole like post that TV show life, where she's, you know, a separate business that is not the TV show, but just as recognizable as ever. Like, you know, I guess there aren't.
She's got to be a pretty big household name for Apple to call out her like this.
No, totally, yeah. Like you know, I'm sure it's true in the UK as much as it is in the US that there aren't, you know. Like, not everyone in Hollywood can be recognizable by face or name or first name, but she's someone who would be.
Go ahead.
The interesting thing is, like, a few months ago, there was a speech that she gave that people thought was like, oh, this, she should run for president because that speech was so good. And, like, what she said was, like, you know, very pointed. And she's like, I'm not going to do that. And then Tim Cook also goes to the "Are you running for president?" question on like every interview, and he's like, "No, I think I'm more effective running Apple than running the country, you know, because like more power, I guess. I don't know, more influence." But the thing is, like, okay, well, Tim Cook got Oprah out of the way, so now, but I mean, that's just joking. But yeah, I mean, definitely a powerful figure. It is a big deal. It's one of those things where, like, I think if it didn't come from Apple's own announcement, like, if it came from one of the usual sources, you'd be like, we'll see, you know. But that's kind of far-fetched. But, you know, by coming from Apple, yeah, it's a big deal. The next thing that they got reported, this was today, was that Sesame Workshop, which I believe is the team behind Sesame Street, we'll be doing kids programming for Apple's video service. This comes from one of the usual sources, Variety. And they say that there will be a multi-series order from Sesame Workshop, which is the nonprofit educational organization behind Sesame Street. They'll produce live action, a series, an animated series, and develop a puppet series for Apple. So this gets you, like, you know, we've had all the sci-fi dramas and, you know, sitcoms that are coming to Apple's video service. They're like really rounding out what they're going to have. You know, this is like content for parents to have their kids watch, you know.
Yeah, and there was that talk about the first animated film as well.
Like, yeah, and that came from Bloomberg. You know, Mark Gurman was on the report, and it was like that was one of the – I don't think it was quite as far along as some of these other ones have been. And everything has been a TV show so far, even like documentary style, but approached as a TV show. The animated, the Bloomberg report was about Apple working, you know, with a film studio, I guess, that makes kids movies, like not TV shows but movies. So a little bit different, but same, you know, the idea is the same thing, is that Apple's putting, they're going to have a lot of their own content to package together.
I mean, if you can do a family-friendly video service, it makes sense to have kids' content as well.
Yeah, yeah. And it does not – like, you know, you'll remember, like, years ago, there was the rumor back when, like, Jimmy Iovine was very influential and Apple Music was, like, the entertainment department for Apple, and, like, they were going to make, video stuff too. That all shifted whenever the Sony hires happened. But before that, it was, like – a repeatedly rumored story that Dr. Dre was going to be in his own TV show called Vital Signs that was like very graphic, you know. It was like drug use and orgies and stuff. It was like wild that you would imagine it being on an Apple service. But that was the rumor, and it seems like that kind of thing is all but fizzled out. And I saw a story this week that Dr. Dre was going to be, I think, in a movie portraying Marvin Gaye, like an official The Family Approves It movie. And it's like it just is like a further sign that all of those old stories are just so separate from like the new stuff now, you know. So, last thing on this. My guess is that there's no way this is included with the price of Apple Music and then it's a separate purchase monthly.
Another $10, or you think less?
Like separate, you know? I think another $10, like a most basic level, another $10. Like you can play with bundles and you can play with, you know, the family rate. But as an individual, $10, and you can access the video stuff. Or $10, you can access.
Are you imagining that so far this service just has Apple's original content shows and nothing else?
There's so much content that I think that
because it's still gonna they've got a lot on their books, but it's still gonna come out to like 20 shows tops, right? Like if you compare like $10 for what you get through this Apple service, and then you know $12 for what Netflix provides, as well as you know massive, like Netflix has all its original stuff, and for a long time they had all of this stuff from third parties that they bundled in as well, and now they're kind of deprioritizing some of that stuff now. But like I think $10 is pretty steep just for, you know, Apple's initial content library.
Yeah. Well, okay. I could see this going for like as low as $7.99, but being a separate purchase from Apple Music is like it seems crazy to me to like invest in all this stuff to just include it with the price of Apple Music. Like, you know, like
I agree with you that it will be separate purchase.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think it might start at like $4.99, or even if for like the first year they just bundle it with Apple Music, but then like the actual plan is for it to be, you know.
I think Apple's always less generous with the offer than we'd like them to be.
And the music business stuff doesn't have big margins, right? You can just look at Spotify's; they you know lose money hand over fist.
Like, yeah,
the $9.99 subscription on Apple Music is, you know, 70% of that going to labels, and they're probably more.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many licenses that they have to pay out on that. Like,
yeah, well, that's another thing is with Hulu and Netflix and, you know, all the similar services, there is an element of a licensed content to make their service plus their original stuff. And so far, we've heard nothing that Apple will do any licensing of content, that it's all so that they're buying. So maybe that helps out. Like, then they can afford to charge less because there's not a catalog of other stuff that you can go and buy on iTunes or like, stream from services.
Because they can charge whatever they want, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I also feel like there could be, like, a late addition to this story, which is Apple makes deals with content providers, you know, to license their stuff to fill the catalog, too.
Yeah, if they do that, then fine. Like, a $10 subscription is getting out there. Like, you wouldn't even need... You just need, like, a few household names of, like, big blockbuster. Like, I know that HBO is never going to give them this, but let's say, like, the last season of Game of Thrones was on the $10 a month Apple Music, on the Apple Video service.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't need, you know, 1,000 movies and 1,000 this and 1,000 that. You just need some, like, because you're going to struggle to make people pay $10 a month for all this original content that's brand new. Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have some stuff that's, like, existing series that they can bring along, it doesn't have to be exclusive, it can just be, you know, also available on Apple Video, whatever they're going to call it, then yeah, they can start charging $10 a month. If it's just going to be their original content offerings, I could see them, if they're going to go that route, then maybe the first year it's all free just to get people on board, and then they start charging, you know, $5, $10 a month for it. But they couldn't come out the gate and charge $10 a month just for Apple's, like, 20 shows, because there'd be no impetus behind it. They're going to have to do some sort of extended free period. Like, Apple Music does 3 months free, and you know what you're getting Apple Music, because it's all, you know, music that you can get anywhere, right? Like, and even they have to give away a three-month trial.
Yeah.
But for this completely untested, unknown series, essentially, right, they can't come out the gate and expect people to pay $10 a month for it.
But
I think they do, like, free for a year, right, and then $10 or something like that. Like, there's going to have to be a big introductory transition, offer, migration. And maybe they do like, oh, you can, if you subscribe to Apple Music, the Apple Video is half price, right? So it's normally $10, but if you have Apple Music, it'd be $5. Like, there's stuff they can play around with there. But yeah, I don't think it'll be like, I don't think the long-term plan is $9.99 a month, you get music and video.
Yeah, I don't think that I'll pay $15 a month for six people to have all of it. Now, I did think that $10 a month was like way too high when we thought it'd be like 10 shows only from Apple. But it's not going to be a lot more stuff. And like, because the stories just keep coming about new shows being developed and added to the lineup. And maybe there's not all in the same year and not all the same wave, but like different, you know, added over time. But to me, it sounds like they're going to have so much stuff, and that it's not just like unknown shows. Like, the names behind the shows are known people, like known producers, known actors, directors. That it's like, if you like this, then you will like this. And it feels like they're really building something like the standalone. The only difference being, will there be a back catalog licensed from, you know, licensed TV shows to fill it out with or not?
Yeah, or like a movie tie-in where you can. When you can watch five movies a month from iTunes included with your $10 subscription. You know, do you know what I mean? Like, something extra on top of, like,
I think even that's like too creative and generous. And even the free year thing, like Apple Music for 3 months is like a behavior thing. Like, they want you to rely on, they want you to build up a catalog of music that you listen to over and over. And like, after 3 months, you feel like you'd lose out if you didn't pay. With the TV stuff, I feel like, you could watch everything if you wanted to, you know, in a certain amount of time. That, like, 3 months even to me feels like way too long. Like, I could still.
Oh, I don't think they're going to do binge. I reckon they'll do week by week.
I don't know about that, because eventually, maybe they do, but then you lead up to, you can binge, because once you release it all after the first year, then it's binge anyway.
I don't think they have enough content from day one to just let it all go out, because then people will watch it in a week and then never come back.
Yeah, well,
like Netflix now has so much stuff that, yeah, they can release, and even they do blockbuster, they're big shows, they do week by week, right? So they don't do everything on like a binge.
It's very rare, though. It's super rare, and Hulu's done it more, but because their old model was network shows, so
for,
you know,
yeah, for me, I can see Apple, I don't think they even want to promote, like, you need to watch our entire series in one day. Like, it's not very
screen time.
You can, you know, limit the amount of time you use your phone. Oh, meanwhile, let's stay up all night and watch our brand new video series. For me, having it on like a weekly schedule feels so much more in line with just like how they would. They can have, you know, one new show every night. Like, Monday, you've got something new. Tuesday, you've got something new. Wednesday, you've got something new. Thursday, you've got something new. And have it like cycle like that.
That's useful to put all the pills to you.
I'd be shocked if they have an entire season of amazing stories out in one go. Like,
well, I
really surprising to me.
I think that we disagree on a lot of like predictions here, and so when we get closer to like maybe even closer to the fall, I don't know if we even agree on like when they're going to shut this stuff off. Like, my guess is this fall or next, between this fall and next fall, but like, it's a wide range.
I've been thinking like at next June at the moment.
Okay, yeah.
With a release in the fall, but they kind of announce it, you know,
yeah,
spring, so, summer next year.
So eventually, in some episode, we should lay down our predictions, and I think they're going to vary a lot as to what they do, and then we can see how it works out. But that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Apollo Zach. Benjamin, you are?
I'm BZA Mayo, and still not on Instagram.
Or Instagram IGTV, huh? And, yeah, and you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And with that being said, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Our thanks again to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring 9to5Mac Happy Hour. Go to linkedin.com/happyhour to get a $50 credit toward your first job post.